This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and we are so pleased that you could join us. You know, when we started this ministry of the radio outreach in 2012, there were a few key individuals who understood that abortion hurts everybody that it touches. It hurts, of course, the children who lose their lives. Hurt doesn't begin to say it. It destroys them. It hurts the women who choose it. It hurts the women who are coerced into it. It hurts the men who either sponsor it or are made bystanders to the deaths of their own children. Abortion is such a hurtful proposition for everybody involved. And as the years have unfolded, we've really been able to expand the message and focus also on prevention. And there are very few people that I know that bring together the complete arc of the story of abortion and the pro-life cause and rescue and prevention. People who bring this together are very rare. We have one as our guest on this episode of Cradle My Heart Radio, and it's really a joy to be able to welcome to the program Monica Kelsey. Monica, welcome. It's just a joy to meet you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Monica is, we told Monica's story a number of years ago when we covered the Safe Haven baby boxes, and that's an outreach that allows women to drop a baby off into safekeeping if it's impossible for her to parent. And we'll talk about that initiative and what inspired it and where it stands today. And it's an amazing aspect of rescue. But to know Monica's heart for this issue is to know her story. And it's a story that Monica didn't really learn in full until she was well into her adulthood. Monica, you grew up knowing that you were adopted, but you didn't learn until you were in your 30s the story of what had happened in your mother's pregnancy that led to her placing you for adoption. Share with us that story and just how it unfolded for you.
Well, I actually reconnected with her at the age of 37. So I was, you know, I was a mother myself, a wife, and I always knew that I was adopted. And my parents, you know, it was never a secret for us. And I just thought that this was normal for people to be adopted. You know, I mean, when people were like, "Oh, you're adopted, that's so cool," and I'm like, "Well, you're not." You know, it was just that normal for me. So my parents made sure that I understood that adoption was a gift. So, you know, at 37, when I reconnected with my birth mom, you know, of course the question came up, you know, why did you place me for adoption? And I was extremely hesitant to ask the question because I didn't know the circumstances. I was never told, and my parents were never told when they adopted me, but, you know, sitting on her couch with my husband by my side at the age of 37, you know, she handed me a folder that had a police report in it, and I couldn't understand what this police report was for. And then the more she talked, the more devastating I felt, and the more hurt I felt for her to go through what she did back in 1972. And you know, she was 17 years old. She was brutally attacked and raped and left along the side of the road. And this was August 25th of 1972 when abortion was illegal in our country. And even though abortion was illegal, she still sought a back alley abortion in October of 72 at the advice of her mother. While standing in front of the man that was going to take her child's life, she changed her mind, which, you know, for me was a blessing. She left the abortion facility and never looked back, and then gave birth to me April 19th of 1973 and abandoned me at a hospital in Montpelier, Ohio. And this was 2 hours after I was born. Mm. And, you know, this was the first case in the small town of an abandonment. So they left me in the you know, where the babies stay the, I can't even think of the word now, not the NICU, but anyways, they kept me in the hospital
the
for
nursery.
9 days.
There, it used to be a nursery.
Nursery, yes.
They don't have them anymore. That's why we couldn't think of it.
Exactly. So I stayed in the nursery for 9 days until they actually located her. And they had filed abandonment charges against her because there was no safe haven law in 1973. And they found her on day number 9. She signed adoption papers, which gave me the gift of being able to track her down when I was 37. So, you know, my biological father is a convicted rapist, and I don't even know my ethnicity, but, you know, I'm still a human being, and I still have value, and my life isn't worth less than anyone else's simply because of the way I was conceived, and I didn't deserve the death penalty for the crime of my biological father. And, you know, the gifts that I was given showed me that, you know, even in the darkest of situations, there is light. And, you know, Christ had a plan back in 1972 out of this brutal attack, and I'm just honored that he chose me to live this life.
Monica Kelsey is our guest, and we could write a chapter on each of the last sentences that you spoke, Monica, because there's so much there. But there's a teachable moment here because I've been trained to do pro-life apologetics. I've heard many people do very effective pro-life apologetics, talking about when does the unborn human life begin to have value. We know life begins at conception. When does it begin to have value? And so we talk about it's our human nature that confers our value on us, and it doesn't come in degrees. If you're human, you have a human nature, you're equally valuable, or there's no such thing as equal human rights. Okay, that's the basic argument. But then we talk about, you know, the objections, size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency, because these are the things people will bring up. Well, it doesn't look like a baby. That's not a baby. That's an embryo. You know, all these objections that will come up. But in addition to SLED, the size, level of development, etc., we need to say the circumstances of conception don't change our value as human beings. And you touched on that in your story, but I really want to give you the chance to flesh that out. You could, because you took it all the way to the end of the argument by saying, I didn't deserve a death penalty for the crime of my father. If I'm paraphrasing, forgive me, but this is really important for people to understand this, Monica, because this is what persuaded me that we cannot have exceptions in the laws that we're pursuing for rape and incest. So say more about the circumstances of conception and why that doesn't change who you are or your value as who you are.
You know, when we look at a woman who was raped and, you know, your heart goes out to her, you don't want her to endure any more pain.
Yes.
And you want to help the situation. So when we focus on, or when the other side focuses on abortion, they focus on the mother. You know, because they want the mother to not have to go through any more than what she already has. And you know, even if this mother has an abortion, it is not going to change the fact that she still has to heal emotionally, physically, and spiritually from this violent act that was made upon her. You know, and you're just adding more to it by compounding the fact that now she's killing her child. So when we think about the mother, we're not helping her. You know, I'm a medic and a firefighter, and it's easy for me to use like the medical terminology for this. But say you're in a car accident and your leg is broken, and you were hit by a drunk driver, and you go to the hospital, and they say you're going to have to be in a cast for 8 weeks, and you're like, well, this stinks. I didn't ask for this, but you're not going to tell the doctors to cut your leg off because you don't want it to heal. You know, so you look at the mother and you say, changing anything from this point on is not going to change the fact that she still has to heal. And, you know, bringing life out of this horrible situation gives her purpose. You know, I look back and I'm sure that in 1973, my birth mother said the word, what good could possibly come out of this? What good could possibly come out of
wow.
this? And then
wow.
37 years later, she meets the daughter that is now a medic and a firefighter that is now saving lives because her life was saved.
You are the
answer.
And
that is Christ working full circle.
Wow.
You know, so we all have purpose. We just have to find it.
Yes. And, you know, the other thing, Monica, that really jumps out at me as you tell your story is the timing that abortion was illegal. And it sounds as if, you know, your mother, having dropped you off at a hospital, was desperate, you know, that she could not parent you, right? I can't imagine what she went through in those 9 days before she was able to do the right thing and sign the adoption papers. It's the right thing, by the way. It's the right thing to go ahead and choose life and place that child in a safe place. That's also the right thing. We need to really say that. But as you know, I've heard other people who were conceived in rape, I think Rebecca Kiesling, say, I wasn't born because I was wanted. I was born because I was protected. You know, the law,
correct.
The law protected me. But now you've had the chance to go back and talk with your mother about, you know, what was going on in her heart and her decision making and then being found and placing you for adoption. Tell me what she's been able to share with you about that process.
Well, you know, getting to meet her and getting to understand her reasoning really brought peace in my life. You know, I always felt like I was the wanted child because I was adopted. But then I found out that I was not a wanted child and I was whisked into this life by violence. And I had to search. I had to search for my cause, my being, my just to find peace. And she helped me get through that. And I helped her find the good that came out of this. You know, it took her 37 years to see the good. And, you know, meeting me, she said, was one of the best days of her life because she knew that she had done the right thing. You know, she said, it's amazing how something so beautiful came out of something so horrible. And I cherish those words because a couple of years ago, she was 57, and she contracted a urinary tract infection that went septic. And she was on a ventilator for 7 days, and for 7 days I sat beside her praying that God would give me more time with her. You know, I had known her for 3 years, and 3 years was not enough to get to know the woman who had sacrificed so much. And she passed away on day number 7. And, you know, I say all the time when I speak, she was with me when I took my first breath, and I was holding her hand when she took her last. And Christ has an amazing way of using us and allowing us to see the good and be there. I am so blessed that I got to know her for those 3 years. I'm so blessed that I got to know her heart. She was amazing. She, you know, and it's very common for rape victims to not have any more children. And she didn't. She didn't have any more children. And she had a niece. Her brother's daughter was very close to her growing up. And now that niece, her name is Teresa, is now on my board of directors for Safe Haven Baby Boxes, fighting for the same child that her aunt abandoned 44 years ago. You know, so there's such a gift, you know. And once you start unraveling the pieces and you see God's work, it's truly amazing. It's truly amazing.
Well, if we were on the radio, I would just give a huge long pause because I feel really speechless about the beauty and sacredness of all that you've just said here, Monica, for us, because the way that God writes our stories is always so beautiful. But what you have told us is that your birth did not ruin your mother's life. The pregnancy and carrying you did not ruin her life. This is the fear-mongering. You know, this is the lie that's put forward that exploits a woman at her very lowest point when she's been, you know, harmed irreparably by a rape, that the baby is going to ruin her life. And what you've just told us is exactly the opposite. And it's really a joy in my spirit that the love for one another was able to be expressed between you and your mother. And now tell us about becoming a firefighter and a medic and the Safe Haven Baby Boxes, because, I mean, you didn't know that you had been dropped off at a hospital by your mother when you started this, right?
I know. I know. And that's the crazy part. Well, and this is even, you're going to love this, but Teresa, who's on my board of directors, who's my biological mother's niece, is also a firefighter and a paramedic.
Wow. And thank you, so your biological mother, because I want to give you a chance before you tell that story, because I think probably a lot of the credit for you becoming the woman you are goes to your mother, right?
Yes.
By that, I mean your adoptive mother. Tell me a little bit about her in this story and the truth coming forward and so on.
You know, I was so blessed to be able to be adopted by my parents. They're still married today, almost 50 years. And they adopted me and my older sister. And then, by the grace of God, she got pregnant with my younger sister. So two of us are adopted and one is biological. And my dad always prayed for a son, and he got stuck with three girls. And, you know, it was kind of the joke in our house because, you know, he said, if I had to use the bathroom, I had to go to the neighbor. You know, we had nine rooms in our house and one bathroom, and he never got a chance to go in it. So, you know, and growing up loved and adopted is such a blessing to these kids. You know, my mom is, and when I talk about my mom, it's my adopted mom because she is my mom.
Yes.
And my mom is the fire, you know, the fire that I needed, I think, to be able to be out here in the public, on stages, on the radio, telling the story, because she was so strong, and she gave us that that example of being a strong woman and fighting for what you believe in. And I think that's exactly what Christ knew I needed in order to be able to do what I do today. But my mom is amazing. My dad is amazing. You know, it's just a blessing. You know, it truly is. A lot of people don't understand adoption. And, you know, adoption unleashes possibility. The possibilities with adoption are endless. And I was given such an amazing set of parents. But, you know, Safe Haven Baby Boxes was...
Yeah, they made you a brave heart, which you turned into life-saving as well as the Safe Haven Baby Boxes.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll tell you, my mom is my biggest fan. You know, my mom... She had a stroke a couple of years ago, and the nurses and the doctors at the hospital all knew about me as the baby box lady, because my mom was just advertising me to everybody when she went down to the CT scan, when she went to the MRI, when she went to have blood. I mean, it was like everybody at the hospital knew who I was, and it was, you know, so she truly is my biggest fan, and she's a little bit older now, so she can't get around as well as she'd like, but you know, she has been my biggest fan.
That's awesome. So the Safe Haven Baby Boxes, for those not yet familiar with it, tell me about that program and what it involves.
Well, the Safe Haven law is in all 50 states, and it basically allows a mother in crisis who cannot care for her child or doesn't want to care for her child a safe place to surrender that child. And here in Indiana, you can surrender a child at any fire station, police station, or hospital. And, you know, the more that I started researching the Safe Haven law, the more I found that women were going to these places, leaving their babies at the doorsteps and not being able to do the handoff where they placed their child in the arms of these firefighters. So I was actually in South Africa in December of 2014 with Pam Stenzel, who's one of my best friends. And we happened to be speaking at a church in Cape Town, South Africa, the only church in Cape Town that had a baby safe. And I was so intrigued by this. I was like, so you actually have women that place their children in this box? And she said, yes, we've saved many children by this. And I was like, why didn't we not have this in America yet? So I came back to the States. I started doing an exceptional amount of research and found that these were not only needed, but these were long overdue to be saving these babies that are being dumped at these locations, you know, because these women are trying to do the right thing. They're going to the fire station, but they don't want to look somebody in the eye and hand their child over. So they're basically leaving their child at the doorstep and walking away. And some of these babies are found alive. Some of these babies are found deceased. And what I did was I came up with a box that goes into the side of a fire station. It basically, you cut a hole out of the wall, kind of like you're putting a window in there. And the box fits right in there, so the inside of the box is on the inside of the fire station, and the outside of the box is on the outside. So when a woman in crisis walks up to the box, she opens the door, and an immediate 911 call goes out. So she doesn't even have to place her child inside, and we are still being called, notifying us that this door has been ajar. And then when she places her child in the inside of the box, the second alarm goes off. This alarm is not attached to the first alarm. So if the first alarm for some reason would fail, the second alarm would not fail. And then we also have a button on the inside for the mom to push. And this was an important piece for me because I wanted this mother to know that if she couldn't do a parenting plan, she couldn't do an adoption plan, and she couldn't walk into that fire station and hand her child over, that she was doing the right thing by placing her child in a safe place and not in a dumpster. So once the mother pushes that, and if she doesn't push that, it doesn't matter because we've already got two calls to this box. She shuts the door locks. So if she changes her mind, she cannot get her child out until firefighters arrive and pull the child from the inside of the box. And then this child is taken to a hospital and placed in the custody of the Department of Child Services. And then usually within, 6 to 8 weeks, this child is released for adoption and placed with its forever family. And, you know, since the law was enacted in 2000, we've saved over 3,300 babies in this country. And that's huge because this is 3,300 babies that might not have made it. And this is 3,300 mothers that did the right thing.
Well, and every time, and it's been a while, but every time we hear about, the teen who dropped the baby in the trash at the prom, I mean, there's some tragic headlines that have come out through the years, which you touched on there, Monica, like what would a woman do? I think there was another story like that last year. Boy, those stories get the headlines. The sharks come out on social media. But what if we knew that there were over 3,000 instances of women doing the right thing and children
right.
living and having a chance? And it's a beautiful story that needs a lot more attention, So, and I'm sure I'm sure there's been pushback. I'm sure there are concerns.
Absolutely.
What's the biggest objection that you think people need to have addressed as you have interacted with this over the last couple of years?
Well, a lot of the people think that we're just directing people to these boxes to dump off their children, and that is absolutely incorrect. We run a 24-hour hotline, and last year in 2016, we received 942 calls. Of those 942 calls, we turned 142 of those calls into crisis pregnancy referrals. Now, remember, these are women that are calling us asking for information on a baby box. So 142 women were directed to crisis pregnancy centers to make a better choice than the safe haven law. And of those 942 calls, four were adoption referrals. We referred four women to adoption agencies across the United States. And then of the 942, we had six safe haven surrenders. So our goal is not to push women to these boxes. Our goal is not to push women to surrender under the safe haven law. Our goal is to push these women to crisis pregnancy centers so they can make a well-educated, informed decision of what their options are. Because the safe haven law is not a good option. It is not a good option. If it's the only option, it's a good option. But we want these women to get help prior to them surrendering their children, because once they surrender their children, we've lost control of these women. They can go home after giving birth, and infection could set in, excessive bleeding could set in, and depression could set in. If these women go to a crisis pregnancy center, we can address all of those, and that is our goal with this program.
Sure, and then you also have, I don't know if this is a concern or not, but I mean, at least you're able to gather some information for the child's benefit in the future should the woman, choose to disclose that.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and we're also launching it's a registry on our website for people that have surrendered under the safe haven law previously in the last 15 years. And this registry will allow any person, whether she did it today or 15 years ago, who surrendered their child that want to get information to that adopted child. And our registry will get the information to the caseworker who handled the adoption. So when that child turns 18, if he chooses to open that record, then that option is available. And that's just another thing that we're trying to do to help these women. Again, make a better choice, because this, the safe haven law is a good choice if it's your only choice. If it's a last choice, but we want them to get help prior to
that. Sure. Beautiful, beautiful. Monica, we've just got about a minute left. I want to give you a chance to directly speak to those people who say, she didn't choose to have sex. She was raped or there was incest, she was exploited by a family member, you cannot force that woman to give birth.
These children are, you know, made in the image of God. My biological father, you know, did a horrible thing to my biological mother. But that doesn't mean that I deserve the death penalty for the crime that he committed. So, you know, we do need to work on the emotional state of these moms and the spiritual state of these moms and the physical state of these moms. And we need to help her along the way and not just give her an abortion and turn her loose.
Monica, thank you so much for opening up your heart. Thank you for sharing such an inspiring story and for the work that you're doing to literally rescue lives. We really appreciate meeting you. And if people want to know more about Monica's Safe Haven baby boxes or her speaking ministry, just go to cradlemyheart.org. We have everything linked for you there. Thank you so much, Monica.
Thanks for having me.
And now stay with us. Coming up on Faith Radio, we'll open up the phones for your calls at 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing is done. When you come to where you're broken.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us here on this Sunday evening for the live portion of Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim Cotola, glad to have you listening, and I really appreciate you staying with us and joining us with your phone calls. Phone lines are open at 1-800-811-3003. And the reason we're here is for your voice to become a part of the conversation. 800-811-3003. I want to share with you a quote that a friend sent me earlier today. And this really inspires me because this is my vision for us who have been impacted by abortion, but also impacted by unplanned pregnancy. I hear from people also quite often that, Kim, I didn't have an abortion, but, you know, we were pregnant before we got married, or the story of their unplanned pregnancy. And so this quote from Philip Yancey, I think, is so pertinent to what we're doing here at Cradle My Heart Radio. Philip Yancey said, "It's absurd to believe that what Is it absurd, that is, he asks, is it absurd to believe that one human being, a tiny dot on a tiny planet, can make a difference in the history of the universe? Well, according to the Bible, that's exactly how God designed the kingdom, this staging ground for the battle of the universe to work. It's a kingdom where God uses healing and maturing people to bring his grace to hopeless and hurting people. You get to use your gifts, passion, and healed heart to show the glory of Jesus, who has loved you beyond telling from the beginning of time." And, you know, as we were publicizing this interview with Monica Kelsey, who's going to join us for the live portion tonight, too, if you have a question for Monica, join us, 1-800-811-3003. This is your opportunity to ask Monica your question and give her your feedback and your thumbs up and kudos for all the great work that she's doing. But one of the things, you know, in publicizing it, I also wrote a piece this week for the Faith Radio blog about this Oklahoma legislator who was writing a law to protect children who have genetic anomalies. And so couples, by a majority percentage, will abort a baby if there's a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome. So a law was being introduced. A bill was had actually passed the House in Oklahoma that said that's discrimination. That's genetic discrimination, because Down syndrome is not a fatal condition. It's not life-threatening to the mother. And so they were trying to protect these children. There was no exception for rape in the law. And the lawmaker, George Fott, really stumbled in his defense of that, and he got boxed into a corner where someone on the floor of the legislature in Oklahoma asked him, do you think that it's God's will that women be raped or suffer incest? And, you know, he was trying to make the point that God can bring great good out of such horrible evil. And he used the biblical phrase from Isaiah, God can bring beauty from ashes. And the headline, of course, said, he defends rape. God brings beauty from ashes. So I said, look, we need to first lead with love. We need to, you know, model empathy for the victims of rape. And got a lot of pushback from people who just aren't there yet in their thinking. They just aren't there yet with their hearts. And so I understand that. I understand people are hurt, people are angry, people are outraged about the injustice of rape and incest. But I feel as though there's a level of healing that can occur where minds and hearts really can change on this issue. So let's bring Monica Kelsey into the conversation. And Monica, welcome to Cradle My Heart for the live portion of the broadcast tonight. How are you?
Hey, good, Kim. How about yourself?
I'm doing so well. And you know, your story just resonated with me. I loved hearing the playback of our conversation. And I know after you do an interview, you know, we always like, well, wish I had said.
Right.
I'll give you the opportunity right up front if there's something that you want to clarify or that you feel like really needs to be said that I failed to ask you. You know, just here's your opportunity.
Well, you know, what you had just said, you know, on the live portion here, about, you know, women who are raped and their unborn child. And I think we've come a long way in the last 10 years with understanding that killing a woman's child is not going to change anything. The woman still has to heal emotionally and physically and spiritually, and killing her child is not going to change that. You know, and I understand the reasoning behind, you know, a woman who is raped and everyone wants to protect the woman, but, you know, we're not protecting the woman. We're not. We're adding more trauma to an already fragile situation. And in the meantime, we're killing an innocent life who deserves nothing but to be loved and adopted or loved and wanted. And I, you know, I hope that through my ministry that I can maybe help some people get there to understand that it's not our fault. You know, I did not deserve the death penalty for the crime of my biological father. And I hope that the work that I'm doing for Christ today gives him glory.
And you know, I mean, beyond a small town where a handful of people would know the circumstances of one's conception, we could be interacting with people every day who were conceived in rape and never know it, because there's no difference between a person conceived in rape and everybody else. I mean, this
right.
is one of the things that's, you know, been so striking to me is that someone said to me they became pro-choice when they heard the testimony of Gianna Jessen. You probably know Gianna's story. Maybe you've met her, Monica. I have not.
We are actually really good friends.
Oh, my goodness.
Her story. I love Gianna, yeah.
I mean, I have been trying to, you know, get an interview with her, and I hope that will happen one day. But anyway, this person was pro-choice, and given the social circumstances that he lives in, he said it would be social suicide for him to become pro-life. He would lose all of his friends. Okay. And I guess I can understand that. I mean, I was pro-choice until I was healed of the abortion in my past. For a lot of years in my adult life, I've kept very silent on the subject. I don't know that I was fearing social suicide, but he said that's what it would be for him. Yet hearing Gianna's story, he said, because, Kelsey, what the world would have missed had she not been born.
Right.
Right? I mean, and how true is this of every single person born? We all change the world the minute we come into it, right? But,
right,
oh my goodness,
right.
So someone pushed back, you know, for me saying that women deserve, what I said was basically women deserve compassion, support, and full justice after the crimes of rape and incest. But children deserve the same before they are born.
Right.
Compassion, support, and full justice. And the pushback is, you know, well, you just, you know, you something about the already living, as if children aren't living before birth. You know, it says you think nothing of the already living in your, you know, people will say your fetish for the fetus. I mean, this person didn't go that far. But forced to experience a pregnancy, already living, and guess what? The pregnancy is already a reality.
Right.
Again, as the point that you've made, this doesn't change it. Monica, so I just want to switch gears. And by the way, so here's the phone number again, because I'm monopolizing the conversation. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. And our guest is Monica Kelsey of Safe Haven Baby Boxes. She's a pro-life speaker, and she shares her testimony of having been abandoned at birth and now having become a rescuer in many different fronts, on many different fronts, in many different ways in her life. Join us at 1-800-811-3003. As I was researching the background to write the blog post about your appearance on the show, Monica, I compiled a half dozen cases of newborn abandonment with 50-50 results of the babies who made it and those who didn't. More than one left in an open field. You know, and it was traumatizing. It was extremely upsetting to read these accounts because of, you know, of course, empathy and care for the babies, but empathy and care for these women as well. And as you've noted, the safe haven laws are in all 50 states, but we're still losing hundreds and hundreds of babies to abandonment, aren't we?
We are. And a lot of people don't understand how many cases every year there are because it's not happening in their backyard. And just because it's not hitting the news doesn't mean it's not happening in your community, because the cases that hit the news are the cases of the babies that are being found. And I can assure you that there are more cases than what we find. And you know, I'm from Indiana, and I take Indiana statistics I watch them very, very closely. And I actually was in the state house lobbying for more safe haven awareness and education. And I actually had the Department of Child Services say that the law in Indiana is working. It saved 33 babies. And, you know, they were excited because these 33 babies had been saved. And I was like, we are ecstatic that these 33 babies have been saved. But did you know that 39 babies were dumped that weren't? So we are top heavy in Indiana on abandonment and lower on women who are actually walking into hospitals and fire stations and surrendering their child legally. And the sad thing is the government thinks that the safe haven law is working. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around. I completely agree that we thank these women who do the right thing. But in order to fix what is broken, we focus on what is broken. And that's the 39 babies in Indiana that were not so lucky. And we are researching every place that these babies are found. And I'll tell you, it's disheartening. You know, 2 weeks ago, we found a baby in a shoebox in a freezer in Indianapolis. A couple months before that, we found a baby in a field in Lowell, Indiana. You know, and before that, a baby at a church in Indiana just left at the doorstep. And the more we research these and we look, it's like these women, it's not that they don't love their child. They love their child. They're trying to do everything possible without having the face-to-face interaction. And that's what Safe Haven Baby Boxes is all about, is for that small percentage of women that will not walk into a fire station, will not walk into a hospital to surrender their child, that want the complete anonymity that the law allows in every state in this country. This is what these baby boxes do. And I say this, I'm on duty right now as a medic in Fort Wayne. My partner just jumped out of the ambulance so I could speak alone. And I say this a lot, you know, I'm from a small town. And as a firefighter, if I'm standing at my fire station today and a woman and a young mother brings a child to me, the chances of me knowing her parents and her brothers and sisters is very good. She's not going to bring me a child. But would she put a child in a safe box, knowing that I would pick that child up within 5 minutes? And I think she would, you know. And we're getting, like I said, hundreds of cases around this country every year of babies being dumped. And we need more awareness in the United States. We need more awareness in all 50 states. We are now currently working outside of this country. Where there are abandoned babies, safe haven baby boxes will be there, because we are all God's children. It doesn't matter what country we're from. Mm-hmm. If we have a problem with babies being dumped, we need to be addressing that. As Christians, as humans, you know, we need to be where these babies are and help save this mother from a lifetime of guilt.
Monica, thank you so much for being with us. I'm not going to keep you while you're on call. And we're also going to speak with one of your board members from Safe Haven Baby Boxes after the break. So thank you so much for being available for us live tonight.
Hey, thank you so much for having us and allowing us to share our ministry and love with others.
And all of the links are at cradlemyheart.org for Monica Kelsey, her speaking ministry, as well as for the Safe Haven Baby Box organization. Thank you, Monica.
Hey, thank you, Kim. You guys have a great evening.
Time for a short break, but our phones are open at 1-800-811-3003. And our pro-life resource tonight is Save One. It's a journal and guide to emotional healing after abortion by Sheila Harper. Join us for a chance to win a copy tonight. 1-800-811-3003.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
1-800-811-3003 is our number, and we have a copy of Sheila Harper's book, Save One, and this is a guide to emotional healing after abortion. Save One is an outreach ministry for women suffering in silence after an abortion, and it has become an international outreach, and they have groups for men as well, but our resource tonight is the women's edition of the Save One Healing Journal, a guide to emotional healing after abortion. If you'd like a copy, join us. 1-800-811-3003, and you do not have to give your name. You can call us anonymously. We'll take your information off the air as to how to get the book to you, but your privacy is assured. But we'd love to hear your voice. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. Joining us now to talk more about Safe Haven is Walt Paca, who is a board member for Safe Haven Baby Boxes in Indiana. Walt, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me.
I hope I've said your last name correctly. I didn't, did I?
It's actually Peja.
Peja. Okay, great. Well, nice to meet you, Walt.
Good to meet you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So tell me about your involvement with the Safe Haven Outreach.
Honestly, I started I think from the beginning, I'm a member of the Knights of Columbus, and at the time that I had met Monica, I was the president of the Central Indiana chapter, which is the best way to explain it. It's like an athletic conference for the Knights of Columbus councils. And our state deputy at that time had said had put a goal out that we were going to support this ministry, and that we wanted to. The state of the jurisdiction for Indiana, the Knights of Columbus, would pay for 100 boxes to go in and stay. And doing the math, that was a pretty tall order. And where I stepped in was trying to help organize that. And from the Knights of Columbus side, and in working with Monica and working with the organization, I really felt that this was something that was, you know, truly calling me in a ministerial sense. And last April, I joined the board and have not looked back since.
What's been the most surprising thing for you? Because I think that, you know, there's still, I mean, as evidenced by, you know, the ongoing loss of life, there are still people who aren't aware of the safe haven laws. It should be something we all know and that we are all helping to make everybody aware of. But what's been the most surprising thing to you as you've gotten to become more knowledgeable about this, about the need and about how it's being met?
I would have to say the resistance to doing something differently. I know Monica had talked about infant mortality in the state of Indiana, and it's troubling from my perspective because Indiana sits in the bottom 10 states in the United States. I think they measure 52, and we're consistently under 42. In the last 2 years, our numbers have been coming up. And this is definitely one of those things that has an awful lot of exposure to the types of communities where these infants come from. So when we look at our system holistically, it's not just about this box. Box gets a lot of focus. And I think that's very interesting, but the bulk of our work is done on our hotline where we – you know, we take the boxes and we advertise them. We have huge banners that go over them. We go to, you know, whatever social services are within that area, and we'll provide pamphlets for them. And we get an awful lot of phone calls to the hotline for people wanting to make life decisions for these infants. And we're able to take these women in crisis and get them to the resources that they need to stabilize their situation, most importantly. And then give them a little bit of room to think through what they want to do to take care of not only themselves but this infant that they've got. And that was – I think that's been the most surprising thing is everybody focuses on the box. But when you look at some of our stats and some of the results out of our organization, it has nothing to do with the box, but it's all about the hotline. And so we're working diligently at making sure that the decision makers in government are aware of what we're accomplishing in that manner.
You know, and I think as a person who has my primary emphasis through the years has been on helping people after abortion. That's what drew me into the pro-life world. That's where the majority of my research time went in the early days. Now we deal with all sorts of issues relating to unplanned pregnancy and recovering after abortion. But you know, what I learned with the abortion piece is that there's no profile. I mean, if there is a poster child, I probably could be it. And I was in my early 20s. I was in a stable relationship. I was using birth control. That is to say, thought I was acting responsibly. And the relationship did not last. You know, but there's a stereotype that the woman who has abortion is either, you know, she's an ethnic minority and she's poor, or she's a teenager. There are all of these stereotypes. And I don't want you to try to stereotype who's vulnerable to, you know, leaving a child as in an abandonment situation. But is there a profile? I mean, what are we learning that those of us who could be providing support might need to know about what the motivation actually is in these situations?
I think most importantly, we're looking at women from the age of 13 to 44 is about the only hard demographic that we've got. Other than that, that would be about the only thing that we're really, really looking at. Then the other thing would be if we're looking at where abandonments may have occurred. But going forward, it's more important, or more importantly, we're looking at who is who's working with us from that standpoint. So if a community is feeling that they have this type of pressure and they'd like to address it, those are typically the how we gain entry into a community and begin to work with them.
You see, right there, I'm very I did not know that the demographic goes as high as age 44. I imagine this would have been a younger woman's issue.
Yeah, and I'm continually surprised by some of the data that we see, but it's definitely, you know, like with what you said, it's not really intuitive. You know, people want to say it's this particular, you know, this particular type of person, and it's not. I think a lot of times what you'll find is that the big common denominator is there's crisis, and we're working towards trying to identify how those crises occur. We've got a lot of hard work ahead of us, but we're going to be working towards that.
Well, Walt, thank you so much for helping to shed light on it for us, and really appreciate the service that you're providing to Safe Haven Baby Boxes as a board member. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kim, and we appreciate your ministry also.
Thank you. Walt Peja with Safe Haven Baby Boxes, and we've got that linked at our website at cradlemyheart.org, and some stories that illustrate what the problem really is. I hope that you'll go and learn more about how you can be part of the solution, because after all, that is what God in Christ has called us to do. If we are not facing a crisis of that magnitude, that means that we may have some resource to be able to help, as meager as our resources may be. If we're not in that crisis, we may be strong enough to be the answer to someone else's devastation. And I pray that you would pray about that and see what God would have you do. Thank you so much for being our guest. Please go to cradlemyheart.org and take a look at our Cradle My Heart Today daily features that are there now posted for you to listen to each week. And remember, we'll be back here next week, and praying for you in the meantime. Jesus loves you, and so do we.